is Jui Rama Prasad. She's an assistant professor of information systems in the Desitel facility of faculty of management at McGill University. She's graduated from the University of California, Irvine campus, and then immediately headed up here 7 years ago, having spent 7 years in this wonderful city. Actually, a view I maintain despite the closure of my favorite restaurant. Her research examines the impact of IT-enabled social interactions on consumption in the context of music and the impact of similar interactions on behavior and matching outcomes in online dating. So music and dating, something we've all done, often simultaneously. So with that, I will leave it to Jui.
Thank you. I think I'm good. I hope people can hear me. Thank you very much. I guess I'll look over here. I enjoyed your presentation, what I could understand of it, so thank you. I'm learning French, but not so well, so I'll be looking over here. So my name is Jui Rama Prasad. I am an assistant professor in information systems. I come from the management school, and a lot of my research is around online word of mouth, how social media is a type of online word of mouth, and mostly in the context of the music industry. So I'll be talking a little bit about that today. I do also study online dating, which most people usually find more interesting, but we'll save that for another time. So before we get started, so how do we define social media? So of course, I got this definition off of one of our favorite social platforms, Wikipedia, right? So social media are computer-mediated tools that allow people to create, share, or exchange information, ideas, and pictures or videos in virtual communities and networks, right? So the key idea that we take away from social media is that all of us users can actually create information, can interact with others and share that information, and then we actually make decisions often based on that information. And that's where the word of mouth part of this comes. So when we think about social media, a lot of us know about Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. A lot of us think about social media in terms of those types of platforms, right? We can post content, post status updates, post photos, like, comment, interact with our friends on these types of platforms. But there are several other types of social platforms that are out there that actually enable a lot more interaction and actually impact decision-making and sales for companies in the end, right? So Yelp, how many of us use Yelp? Yeah? Okay. Goodreads, anybody in here use Goodreads? TripAdvisor, right? Exactly. So a lot of us use these different types of platforms in order to make decisions about what restaurants we're going to go to, maybe what books we're going to read. Goodreads is a really cool platform if you haven't tried it yet, and won't make a hotel reservation until we've actually looked up the reviews on TripAdvisor, right? So this is all of us using the information that other people have about their experiences to inform our own experiences. This is particularly important for those goods that we need to sample before actually knowing the value of, right? Like music. So looking over here, so what we actually are getting from these types of platforms is word of mouth, right? So word of mouth is the fact that I have an experience, I can share it with you, and you make a decision based on that. But online, this word of mouth is greatly amplified, right? And there's been a lot of research that has been done about the impact of these types of review systems on actual consumer decision making. Do they actually matter in terms of making decisions? Yes, that's what the research has said, right? Positive customer reviews on sites like Amazon actually do impact other consumers' decisions. Negative customer reviews, or a high variance in customer reviews, if there's a large distribution in the types of reviews, actually negatively impact future sales or other consumer decisions. And features like Amazon verified reviews or helpfulness voting, if you've ever seen that on Amazon, can actually replicate what we see in the offline world where we know the credibility of our source of information, right? So in the online world, we don't really know who the people we're getting information from are, and so online we have to implement features that sort of can replicate that type of relationship offline. Of course, as we talked about in some of the earlier sessions, I think there were questions about that. We do have the issue, especially in the last couple of years, this has come up a lot, the issue of fake or fraudulent reviews, right? So I wrote a book. I'm going to get all of my friends to go and write a review on that book, right? I want to boost the 5-star ratings for my book. There have been techniques that are used to deal with these types of fraudulent reviews. So one is fraudulent reviews or fake reviews have very common characteristics across them. Often these reviewers only do one review, right? These reviewers use a lot of exclamation points. If you're on TripAdvisor, they'll be very, it's true, on TripAdvisor, they are very general reviews. They don't actually talk about the hotel, for example, but they'll talk about how other people in your family experience the different parts of the hotel. So they're very, if you mine enough reviews, you can actually see characteristics of the reviews that help you indicate whether they are, help you determine whether they're fake or not. And this can be put into an algorithm and help platforms actually predict, right? So you can predict which ones are fake reviews or at least flag those reviews. Another way of dealing with fraudulent reviews is by plugging the review system into an ecosystem that does verify the people, verify the identity of somebody, right? So a similar example to that is Amazon. If you have done a purchase, if you have purchased a product, you're a verified purchaser, okay, you can actually review that product, and we know you've actually purchased that product. It's not a fake review. This is where I'll bring online dating in a bit. If anybody in here has used Tinder, you know you have to sign up. Does everybody know what Tinder is? Tinder is an online dating mobile application where you swipe right or swipe left to choose a potential partner, and you have to use Facebook in order to sign up for Tinder, right? So this means you're part of an established ecosystem that does verify that you are a real person before you can use something like Tinder. So those are some different ways that have been introduced in order to deal with fraudulent reviews. To go back to the different types of reviews that you have, if you look on different types of sites, there are different ways you can get information from other consumers, right? So often you'll see, or what we used to see, is the New York Times top 10 book review, right? It's our book list. We know the best-selling books, and maybe we make decisions off of that. When we transfer that into the online context, we can go into what I studied, an online music community, where you see 100 people have favorited the song or liked the song. So that's a general popularity represented across the community. Outside of that, so I like the song, right? Outside of that, you can also have individual proximity influence, right? So we call the number of likes or number of favorites of a song popularity influence. You can have proximity influence. Often these online platforms allow you to form connections with other people that you know, right? So I have friends on my Spotify account, for example, right? And I can see what they've listened to. So does that influence what I'm going to listen to more than whether the entire community influences what I'm going to listen to? So this is actually some research that I did. What we found is, of course, popularity matters, right? Overall popularity does matter. Proximity matters more. If it's a friend who recommended something or a friend who liked something, that matters more. But what's particularly interesting is that popularity influence matters more for less popular music, right? For music or goods that are in what we call the tail. Things that you wouldn't have been, products you wouldn't have been exposed to if you hadn't been online, for example, right? And so this allows, these sort of consumer reviews actually allow us to be exposed to and access products that we might not have been exposed to before, right? And for the producers of those goods, that's a really positive thing as well. We'll talk about that a bit more in music. So Amazon, Spotify, anybody here use Spotify, music listening, music streaming site, Netflix. So all of these actually use the social platform or create a peer group for you to recommend songs, music, books to you, right? So this is called a recommendation engine. Prior, in the prior examples I used, we actually know the people, or you know that there's a community of users who have listened to a certain set of music or a certain book. These sites, Amazon, Spotify, and Netflix, are all using recommendation engines. So they create a peer group for you. They say, because you've listened to, I'm going to give you a really bad example, but Lady Gaga, Beyonce, and Kanye West, maybe you're going to like the new Usher song, right? Something like that. So they use the behavior of what you have done on the site, compare it to the behavior of what other people have done on the site, and recommend you new things. So it's not your friend, but it's the peer group that they create for you. These recommendation engines can work in many different ways, but that's one example of how it can work. Okay, so does anybody know who those people are?
Big band?
Big fan. A big fan, okay, good. Of? Huh? Arcade Fire, right? So Arcade Fire is what? It's a Montreal, we like to say it's a Montreal band, right? Arcade Fire. So they're a Montreal band, and they released an album a long time ago in 2007 called Funeral. And Funeral is, they attribute the success of Funeral to social media, right? So they said, so there's a music blog at that time, and even now they still exist, but at that time music blogs were a really good way to discover music. There's a music blog out of Montreal called Stereo Gum that posted songs off of this album. And this went viral, as we say, right? Consumer people listened to this. They could listen to the experience good, sample the experience good, and they shared it. And this spread throughout the ecosystem of music listeners. And they say, in a New York Times article shortly after, they said, we attribute the success of this album to the buzz on social media. Other musicians don't necessarily, or other artists don't necessarily have this happen to them, but we do see that recommendation engines drive people to listen to music that they wouldn't have discovered before, right? So technology, social platforms are sort of driving this consumption to what we call the tail. So that's the example of Arcade Fire. So then we have this last set. So what we started over on the left was with interaction, right? So Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram allow us to interact. We can get opinions on Yelp, Goodreads, and TripAdvisor. We can get recommendations on sites like Amazon, Spotify, and Netflix. And then we move to this last part of the social, last thing that I would like to talk about in terms of social platforms, which are where consumers are actually co-creating knowledge or co-creating the product, right? So anybody has ever done an edit on, or anybody use Wikipedia? Yes, right? So we all use Wikipedia as a source of information. Has anybody done an edit on Wikipedia? Tried to do an edit on Wikipedia, okay? So when you try to edit something on Wikipedia, there is anybody can edit anything, right? But there's a community of users who polices those edits, right? So I can say, no, I don't think that edit is correct, or you can say that to me, just as another user within the community. So this is a community-generated social or encyclopedia, right? For most things, Wikipedia is pretty reliable. I'll talk about this again in a moment. Has anybody heard of the company called Threadless? So Threadless is a t-shirt company. It's a community-based t-shirt company, right? So you go on the platform. There are designers who go on the platform. They design t-shirts. Other members of the community can vote for the t-shirts. And depending on the number of upvotes, it increases the likelihood of being produced, right? So the community does all of the work in this business model. They design the shirts. They create demand for the shirts. They buy the shirts, right? And they vote on the shirts. And the company is sort of there like, okay, what are we doing? We're actually producing the shirts. So in some ways, it's very cool. It's a place where designers can get experience, maybe even get their t-shirt printed. But there's a lot of controversy in some ways about, is Threadless sort of taking advantage of these community-based community members who are willing to design for basically nothing? The likelihood of getting a design actually made is 0.6%, or at least the numbers I know. So very low, right? And then we have things like Amazon Mechanical Turk. This is sort of moving into the sharing economy, which we talked about earlier, which is accessing work on demand. If I need a survey filled out for some research, I can post it on Mechanical Turk. I can put some guidelines, pay a certain amount per hit, and get people to fill out that survey very quickly, right? That's the way I use it as a researcher, but there are many other tasks you can have done on Mechanical Turk as well. So to talk a little bit more about the Wikipedia example, so this is a really excellent community-based model. We all use Wikipedia. There's a lot of information on Wikipedia. We can add that information ourselves. But sometimes it doesn't go quite right. Okay, so there's an article I read recently called How I Accidentally Started a Wikipedia Hoax about Amelia Bedelia. Does everybody know who Amelia Bedelia is? It's a children's book. I loved it when I was growing up. So in the Wikipedia entry until a few years ago, it said that Amelia Bedelia was based, her character was based on a maid in Cameroon. Turns out somebody named E.J. Dixon, when she was in college in 2009, one night with her friends, it was a fun night that they had, they were editing Wikipedia pages, 2009. And she wrote in the Amelia Bedelia entry on Wikipedia that Amelia Bedelia's character was based on a maid in Cameroon. 5 years later, she sees this being tweeted as a fact by a New Yorker writer, journalist. 5 years later, this hadn't been edited yet, to be correct, right? So Wikipedia depends on the community to edit, to monitor itself, to police itself. But when you have a page that doesn't get a lot of eyeballs and doesn't have get a lot of eyeballs that have a lot of expertise on that particular topic, it's not going to be fixed, right? If you say something incorrect about President Obama, it will be fixed very quickly. It'll be edited very quickly. A lot of people look at that page. A lot of people have expertise on President Obama. But if you go to more niche type pages, you can end up having something that's incorrect stay there for a very, very long time. Right? So every time when I talk about this in class with my students, at least one person in class says, yes, I've incorrectly edited a Wikipedia page. Yeah, and sometimes it gets fixed very quickly if it's a popular page, but if it's not, it can stick around for quite some time. So that's just a word of caution as well if you use Wikipedia for anything, for something, if you're quoting Wikipedia ever. On the other side of that, we have people organizing on social media to actually fight against consumers coming together on social media to actually fight against things that they believe are wrong, ethically incorrect in corporations. So Chick-fil-A has had a lot of backlash on social media in the last several years. One of the more recent events was their president contributed to an anti-gay rights organization, and there was a huge backlash on Twitter based on that. It's cottage cheese. People in Israel were offended by or upset by the deregulation of cottage cheese, actually increased the price of cottage cheese, and so they fought back on Twitter by boycotting hashtag boycott cottage cheese. Everybody heard about this year, right? The Red Cup controversy at Starbucks. Starbucks decided to not put Christmas decorations on their, or holiday decorations on their Red Cups this year. And this, of course, created a huge Twitter backlash, a huge social media backlash saying that Starbucks is anti-Christmas, right? So this is, many people believe this. In the end, Starbucks actually benefited from the free PR that it got from this ridiculous sort of social media uprising. And so that's the flip side of a social media sort of controversy. And then we have a variety of other sort of social media activism that we see. So Blackout Black Friday, Boycott Black Friday were around the mistreatment of Black Americans in the U.S. They said, we're going to show that we have economic power, and we're going to say, let's not purchase things on Black Friday. So that hashtag was going around on Black Friday this year. Opposite opinions on boycotting Tim's, boycott Tim's, right move Tim's. So this is about displaying advertisements for Enbridge within their coffee shops. Some people said, yes, great, that was a great move, right move Tim's. Other people said, no, this is not quite good, boycott Tim's. And then another hashtag, save RDT. It's a CEO of a grocery store chain in Boston. He was fired. Apparently people were really upset about it, so they wanted to save him, and so that was another thing. So this is sort of the other side of social media a bit, right? So we can actually use social media to be active about different things that impact companies in the end. So what I want to wrap with, I probably did that much faster than I was supposed to because I talk very fast when I'm presenting, but what we see generally when we are using social media is we see the benefits of it. We actually take a lot of value out of the information we can get, but we have to also be very careful about the flip side of social media and sort of the messages that can be spread, incorrect messages that can be spread in different ways online. So that's all. Yeah.